Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Vishad Desai Associates webinar on Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code 2016, Impact on Bondholders, Investors, and Companies. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. M.S. Anand. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Ali. Welcome everyone to the bankruptcy event on the bankruptcy code. Welcome to those who have joined on the call, and welcome to those who are here in Delhi. To start off, we'll have a brief introduction by Pratibha Jain, partner at Vishad Desai Associates. She's the head of the regulatory practice and partner of the BFSI practice at Vishad Desai Associates, followed by a brief talk on the code by Mr. D.K. Viswanathan, and then we'll have the Q&A session.
Thank you and welcome everybody. You know, we're very fortunate to have Mr. Viswanathan here today with us. He, as you know, most people on the call will know that he's the chairman of the Bankruptcy Law Reform Committee. People might not know that, you know, he's held various illustrious positions in the government over the years and, you know, I personally have great respect for his legal acumen. He's been the law secretary, he's been the secretary general of the Lok Sabha. He's presently the consultant to the President of India, and many people might not know that he's been the leader of Indian delegation to UNCTAD for a number of years now. So, you know, an interplay between bankruptcy code and, you know, how we will resolve issues around, you know, the Indian litigation system, which, you know, thwarts any legislation that wants to needs to work effectively. So I think you would have put in a lot of thought into this issue too. So we are very, you know, grateful for having you here today. And also, you know, when the bankruptcy code was being drafted, knowing that you were, you know, at the helm, gave us a lot of comfort, and that shows in the code when it came out. It's a very well thought out piece of legislation, much needed. You know, the history of the bankruptcy proceedings in India, you know, apart from just practically how it's worked in the past in terms of delay, I think more importantly, we've never had a one piece of legislation that dealt with all the issues that encompass, you know, such a proceeding. It was spread across Contract Act, your company law, your PFIR, there's about half a dozen various laws and regulations that covered it, and then accordingly, the authorities that covered it. The bankruptcy code is a very, very much-needed legislation to bring all of that into one place and centralize the whole process. In fact, you know, yesterday I was speaking at a key event on capital markets, and the additional secretary from Ministry of Finance was talking about the importance of the revival of debt markets in India, or growth of debt markets, can't really say revival, because we've really not had a buoyant debt market in India. And a key to that really is an effective bankruptcy system. So, you know, it affects anybody who wants to invest in India, anybody who's already invested in India, anybody who has a company in India and, you know, hasn't been working well. So the ramification of it is quite widespread. We might not be able to cover all of it today, but the kind of, just to give a sense of the people on the call with us in the room, you know, corporate professionals, investors, and so really the focus and a lot of people from various banks. So really focus on, you know, creditors' rights, how creditors' rights will be protected under the new regime? You know, what is the distribution waterfall and how will it actually get practically enforced? We understand that, you know, the National Company Law Tribunal has been constituted recently, but we are still appointing the judges. So, you know, how do you see that process getting laid out and the timelines for that? The bankruptcy court has also been constituted. But just understanding also, you know, practically, how do you see all of this being laid out in the near future and how quickly do you think we can have the regime being effective? I think those are some of the key issues that we would want to discuss today. With that, if I can just ask you to, you know, just kick off with the thought process just behind, you know, always with the new legislation, we would like to understand, you know, what the committee was thinking, what the lawmakers were thinking, so we understand the intent and accordingly interpret the legislation.
Thank you, Pratibha. Thank you, Mr. Anand. And good evening, friends. When I was assigned this task of drafting a code at bankruptcy court, and I was the chairman of this insolvency bankruptcy committee, banking reforms, bankruptcy reforms, law reforms committee, my mandate was very large. So I have to look into many statutes and try to bring under a single umbrella bankruptcy of corporates, insolvency of corporates, and partnerships and individuals into a single court. This, in the beginning, appeared to be a very daunting task because, you know, India has a very large statute book and we have many acts, each working at cross purposes with each other. So the task of identifying each one of them and then trying to bring them under one umbrella proved to be a very difficult task, but we achieved it in a record time. As Principal said that we don't have a corporate bond market mainly because the recovery rates for debt for corporate debt is very poor because the system is so bad. And we don't have a single law which deals with bankruptcy or insolvency. We have this Companies Act and it is official liquidator's office. It takes many years for a company to be wound up and the realization of assets to be taken when the siphoning off takes place. We have very bad experience with CIPLA, the BIFR, where people use BIFR for the automatic stay and abuse of process, and when the different possession regime led to a lot of abuses. So we had to address these issues, and we also had to think about a situation where all business failures is not equal to small business. It's not necessary that every time somebody defaults and then you business. If market failures are common in any market economy, it's not necessary that everyone will succeed. So India, unfortunately, for various reasons, default business failure has been equated with malfeasance, where it is equated with the promoters tightening up assets and then the banks getting into debt. The main reason for that, in India, we don't have a bond market, but in Western countries, they raise money from the bond market for running a business. We have to depend upon the banks and financial institutions in India. And this has led into a lot of difficulties. It has brought its own difficulties, the banks have gone into difficulties, and then people don't get easy credit. Earlier, two attempts were made to reform this bankruptcy law, two committees were there. But then those committees, though they did a good work, they did not succeed because they didn't come up with a code. So we thought this time we should have a code which is passed with Parliament and which is put in the statute book under one umbrella, so we will be able to. So the big thinking which permeated the entire thought process is, first, business failures are normal, not a market failure. People should be able to come out, wind up, then start fresh again. So this is not held against them. Secondly, you should also ensure that there is no siphoning of assets during the time when there is a default. So we wanted, instead of debtor in possession, the control should pass on to the creditors committee. Then, thirdly, we should also ensure that people should be entitled to take this. Limited Liability Corporation, Solomon was responsible for the great advances of the Industrial Revolution. Most of the progress, economic progress, is due to the House of Lords decision where people were encouraged to take risks and then better with that if it fails. Similarly, we wanted to ensure that people are encouraged to take up risks, and if they are not successful, they should wind up and go away. This is a thought process. Now, as you had a very bad experience with the judicial system, all of us have this difficulty where judicial delays. You have, whenever you go, you have these court systems, in spite of the legislative prescription that they should not grant adjournments, things go on, they get prolonged, and then nothing is completed in time. And this results in the asset, destruction of value of the assets, and then there's nothing left for the creditors. And then, the whole thing went up in such a way, in 2002, the government came up with the SARFAESI Act, Securitization Act. But that has also not succeeded because in spite of the Securitization Act, people are not able to realize the security and walk away. It has been taken through various cross litigation and it has ended up. The bankruptcy code, there is a thinking that we should also do away with the Securitization Act. The code should contain everything and then people should amend the code and realize their assets. So the thinking that we thought time is not very ripe for us to touch the Securitization Act, because the banks and others were all very much keen to have it. But there is nothing in the code which compels the security holder under the Securitization Act to come under the code. And he doesn't compel anybody. But if he comes out, he fulfills his right, he gets a higher waterfall provision there. Now, having said that, the thing process, as we structured that code, drawing lessons from UK and USA, and then the whole game change is from the resolution professional who is going to be in charge of running the affairs of the company once the resolution petition is admitted by the tribunal. The National Company Law Tribunal will be for corporate insolvency and the debt recovery tribunal for individual and partnership firms. There is a lot of criticism as to why you have conferred this individual bankruptcy jurisdiction upon the debt recovery tribunal, because they are already not, they have not, don't have a poor record, and then it may not be able to meet the challenges which are facing them. We knew that problem, but then if you want to create a separate tribunal to confer this power of individual bankruptcy upon corporate, the company law tribunal would have been too heavy for them to manage. So the company law tribunal already was late by more than 10-12 years. We thought we should not disturb that structure. We thought we will re-engineer this debt recovery tribunal in a very big way. Finance Minister assured us that he is going to re-engineer it, and he has done that. In the latest amendment to the Securitization Act, he has done a lot of things to make it an online court, electronic transmission of documents, and then also to bring in cross-litigations, and the debt recovery tribunal will adjudicate upon leasehold rights and third-party rights. So this code, anybody can file a petition for insolvency, the financial creditors, the operational creditors, and the corporate debtor himself can file. So different eligibility for different risk requirements for filing the petition. And when the petition is filed, the resolution professional is appointed, interim resolution professional is appointed, and the management of the company is shifted under Section 17. Immediately the management of the company is shifted, and a committee of creditors will run the show. And the decisions of the committee of creditors will be 70% of the voters, creditors voting. Now, there is also a thought that, in US they have a problem because the high-value creditors used to muzzle the people with lesser value. So they said, but we thought it is too much to address that in the court itself. Let us leave it to the creditors to deal with the issue. The second most important thing all of us face is things should not get lost in the courts. Instead, a company can be revived, kept as a going concern, or it should be wound up. It's a decision, it's a market decision. It should not be a judicial decision. That was very firm in all the thinking. There is no point in judges sitting over and deciding whether the company can be revived for the sake of the workers, or it should be wound up. It's a market decision. Critical to the first people to have the financial stake, they should decide it. And once they decide, the tribunal only has to approve it. They should not sit in judgment. They have very narrow grounds on which they can question the resolution plan or the liquidation order. The whole thing is time bound. Timelines are sacrosanct. People are very skeptical when I said we have provided timelines. You have to have 180 days, like 90 days is the outer limit. And fast track, it is 90 days, plus 45 days. This will never work because the tribunals and the courts don't adhere to the timelines. But we said this has to work. If timelines are fixed, the whole thing will not work. And if they don't pass orders within the country, everybody has to act within some way. Suppose the tribunal wants some resolution professional to be nominated to the board. The board has to answer within 6 or 7 days. They have to answer and appoint somebody. So everything is written, it is linked to the clock. Now, if judges don't decide according to the timeline, there have to be reasons why they have not done that. So we have imposed heavy burden upon them to come out and say why you are not adhering to the timeline. And the resolution professionals are those people who will manage the entire show. The entire code, the soul of the entire code is the resolution professionals. So these are the people from different areas and different expertise. It's very difficult to straitjacket and find out that from lawyers, from accountants, from bankers. You can come from different streams because there are different types of enterprises. So the digital economy has opened up so many startups. You do not know the experience of different enterprises cannot be confined to any particular stream. So we have left it open and bold. We have conferred a vast powers upon the board to recognize these professionals and also to discipline them. We don't want them to go the same way the recovery officers are working in the debt recovery tribe. So we, you know, we hear so many things about how recovery process takes, it's delayed, cycling takes up. We don't want that to happen. We want to have high-class professionals, people who adhere to the highest ethical standards, professionally qualified, and who are under the watchdog of the board, the insolvency regulatory board, who will take care of that. There's another area where we are lacking. There is a delay. The delay is because not only there is a multiple judicial fora, there's no single law that deals with that. There's also a lack of information. There's information asymmetry between the creditors and the debtors. When a debtor goes into default and the creditor tries to enforce the security, and then you find a lot of third-party claims are all searched up. And then you don't know the real valuation assets to the debtor. So all these things are very difficult. So we conceive we should have information utilities. And the law, latest law on securitization makes it mandatory for a security holder to get it registered in the central register. Unless you get it registered, you will not be able to enforce the security. And the law has been amended also to enforce the district magistrate to enforce the security, actually recovering the assets, and also in case you want to take over the management, we should assist the banks and other creditors in taking over the management. Within 30 days, timelines are prescribed. So, invariably you see, and this, only once you register with the register, you get priority over crown debts, that is, over the government dues. That is something which is a great advance we have made in the court. Even under the insolvency code, we find the crown debts have been pushed down below the waterfall provision. Section 53 provides for waterfall and a distribution of the liquidation estate. Where after the resolution proposal expenses, and this crown debt comes down below, and the unsecured creditors rank high. So bondholders will come there. Now, how this code will encourage the corporate bond market? Because bondholders will be treated as financial creditors, and the financial creditors will have a say in realization of the assets as a credit in the creditors' committee. So there will be a good recovery rate for the bondholders. So we hope this will lead to a good corporate bond market and also flourish. And there is another aspect which we are very concerned. In India, there is excessive dependence upon securities. And people want personal guarantee. Instead of company directors or asking personal guarantee. So people are only concerned, are more comfortable with securities. The risk is you can't raise finance. There is no question of people looking into your cash flow and advance in project loans. This is a non-existent here. So this is causing problems. Everywhere you get entangled, the company goes into default, the promoters get entangled and personal guarantees change. So this is something which you have to avoid. People should not depend upon security for raising money. Now, in case a company director has given a personal guarantee and it goes into insolvency, it will not go before the regulatory tribunal. To avoid multi-disability, we will be sucked into the company law tribunal. And the company law tribunal will handle that case also. So there is avoidance of multi-disability fora has been taken care of. Everything comes in. Appeals will go to the appeal tribunal under the National Company Law Tribunal and the regulatory tribunal. And from there, only appeals to the Supreme Court and a question of law, nothing else. The grounds on which appeal will lie and appeal to the appeal tribunal listed out the section, and then from there to the Supreme Court only on a question of law. We have tried to amend as many acts as possible to take care of it. We have knocked out, we repealed the Provincial Insolvency Act and the Provincial Insolvency Act and the Provincial Presidency Council Insolvency Act. Both are old acts, 100-year-old acts. It is not functional. And then we confer the jurisdiction upon the district court tribunals. And there is a criticism that in taking away the jurisdiction of the district courts, there is no access at the grassroots level. Then we did provide for sitting of these statutory tribunals in every district headquarters in circuit cities. It is under the section which it makes it mandatory for a statutory tribunal to go to every district headquarters and sit in circuit cities so that there is no challenge on the ground. Access to justice has been denied. And you are taking away from a district court, there is no alternative for again it should not land us in a litigation. So you are taking care of that. And then these are the things which we have drafted this, and I'll be very happy to respond to initial queries from all of you.
Sure. So before we do that, Anand, do you want to go a little bit more deep dive into, you know, certain aspects of definition of creditors, you know, and the distribution what fall under the Act, and you know, the whole concept of committee of creditors. Know how
would
that work under, you know, Indian system,
right?
And you know, what happens to
that liability? So to start off, sir, we note that you know, for a change, the court, unlike the earlier laws, which gave preference only to financial creditors, here even an operational creditor who needs to recover money quickly, his working capital is in flow, even he has access to an expeditious dispute resolution mechanism. But while for operational creditors, there is a mechanism where once the notice goes, the debtor can then say that he's going to initiate arbitration or he can otherwise dispute that debt. But with respect to financial creditors, there is no such mechanism where the debtor has an option to dispute the debt. It goes on the basis that because there is a debt due and there's a default, under that mechanism, it seems to not comply with principles of natural justice.
No, I think this point we discussed, operational creditors may not have everything reflected in the information utility. Financial creditors, everything will be readily available. So
right.
You can't dispute and raise the issue there, try to delay it. So that is the reason why these operational creditors, because they may not, their views may not be reflected in the utility. That is the main reason. That is the main reason. And as far as financial creditors are concerned, everything will be, debtors, things will be deflected. So there is no question disputing at that level.
Understand. Okay. So, sir, one of the things that you had mentioned was how you try to reconcile all the statutes and there's multiple repealments and things like that. And in fact, in this last case amendment now, there is one with respect to, as you had mentioned, the company law tribunal can look into aspects of claims of landlord tenants as well, and it cannot be publicly used for the purpose of money recovery or recovery of the property. Sir, what about rights of states under state revenues? So to an extent that is going to go away now because of GST, but all the state tax and all we get to pay. But do you foresee any problem if revenue laws continue to...
No, we have drafted Section 53 in such a way, even those are overridden.
Okay.
Section 53 is very clear.
Right.
You said this was very much debated, because most of the litigation is centered around from state legislation, state revenues.
Correct.
53 is very clear. Notwithstanding anything to the contrary contained any law enacted by Parliament or any state legislature,
sometimes
imposed. So we have foreclosed it.
Yes, okay. So on in the court, he's made a conscious effort to give some amount of management rights to creditors. Now, this is something that even Prabhupada alluded to. Before the committee, the committee of which you were the chairperson, there was some literature which talked about the pros and cons of that. I'd like to cite only two examples. One was, maybe three examples. One was Chrysler in 1980s, when it was on the verge of bankruptcy and then it went to Congress, it got funding. And more recently, in 2008, after the financial crisis, it affected Ford, General Motors and Chrysler again. And again, U.S. Congress and the Canadian government invested. And then sometime in between both of these two events, there was Nissan. What the experience in the U.S., what they have seen is that at times like this, when a company is on the verge of bankruptcy, what it needs is capital. A close example of this is when financial companies are subject to stress tests, telling the shareholder, you bring in money, and we as government or lenders, we'll put in more money. Do you think that would have been, should that have been incorporated in the statute of giving management rights for creditors to be more helpful, either in ensuring that it doesn't become bankrupt, or that a company which is on the verge of financial imprudence doesn't further go down that path and it's able to come back?
No, I think in the U.S., they don't have a public sector bank like we have. But in such a situation, we can always handle through the public sector banks. This is how we handle it now. So it's always possible to introduce new finance to these financial institutions. But you know, this, we believe that financial creditors are the first person to decide how they will bring in fresh money. They are the best persons to decide. And we didn't want to address this issue in the legislation because, you know, putting anything in the legislation in India, everything gets interpreted and goes to the court. So we never wanted that. We didn't want to open this court to any judicial interpretation.
Right.
We just wanted this to be a straitjacket thing. Should address only insolvency and bankruptcy related matters, and they should be handled only by these judicial fora. It should not go to a high court. It should not go anywhere. It should be a straight thing, and it should remain like that. That's what we designed. So we were a bit careful in not bringing in external elements which would have invited as
right.
some criticism or some controversy or some debate, which will not be, it will distract from the main object of the court.
Right. So now related to the role of the creditors committee, there's a fine line, you also talked about it, in India we have, especially after the Kingfisher episode, we have this tendency to view every company which is becoming financially insolvent as, you know, being a case of mismanagement and deliberate mismanagement. So there's a need to balance the rights of the company, basically the shareholders and the company on one side, and, you know, the creditors and society on the other. So when it comes to the invocation of the court, they're already very dangerously close to the parts where looking at public good or probably winding up a little more. So how would you suggest that we should approach this so that the tribunal which is examining the books of accounts, the record, the insolvency professional who is looking, who is going to make a case for revival, how should he make his case before the adjudication authority? What can the shareholders do to say that, okay, look, you know, we know what economics says, but we've been behind this country for 20, 30 years. So this is what we would like to do. So how do you think
actually these directors and other people, though they don't have a voting right in the creditors committee, they can be present there.
Right,
they are
right.
Present there. Their voice will be heard. Even operational creditors, we didn't initially give them anything, but then the committee said, no, they should be given an opportunity.
Right.
So they will have their voice heard there. And the part, the most important function of this resolution professional is a preparation of the information memorandum. And he has to prepare that and resolution plan. So this resolution plan, he has to sit with everybody and it has to be something on which there has to be a lot of give and take. And you see, and the only thing is an appeal can lie to the appellate authority under Section 61. See, an appeal against an order approving a resolution plan under Section 31 may be filed on 5 grounds.
Correct. Very,
now
limited,
so
very limited.
So it is limited. So if it falls within any of these 5 grounds, the tribunal will look into that.
Right.
So you have a remedy there. Beyond that, you have to leave with the creditors committee decision. The problem that we have seen is this particularly under RCC is when an asset was to be sold, when you had the 13-2 order, you go for auction proceedings. Immediately there will be an objection saying that the valuation is wrong. And then you'll have collateral proceedings even before the magistrate can pass any order. There is, you have a writ, then writ appeal, and then an SLP saying that there is a gross mismatch between the value which is shown and current market share. Now, we cannot prevent people from litigating, but what are the safeguards over there, the non-statutorily entrenched safeguards which can be there?
All those cases will only come before the tribunal. It will not go to courts.
No, sir. The writ petition, because even when SARFAC was there,
now writ petition should be closed.
Should be closed. Okay. I think that is, that is where we have seen a lot
and
of...
And there is also a section which deals with extra-state transactions where we look back 2 years behind and see if we have done something with creating third-party rights. You can always look back 2 years and cancel and nullify all those transactions.
Right.
That is a very useful thing.
What we've had in, I think, transfer of property and...
But then they are not even effectively used.
For cancelling... Right.
So the... Now, many of them are not transparent. Now everything will be reflected in the information utility.
Right.
So it will be very difficult to hide or create any interest with the retrospective.
Right. So the finance minister had indicated that the entire infrastructure is there in place should be around 2017 for you know, the whole code and the machinery to start working. Now, before that, there will be people who want to understand the role of the insolvency professionals and how they can be part of this. Given that they're going to play a very important role in the revival or the realization.
You know, actually, subsequent to this enactment of the court, there is an oversight committee headed by the Secretary of Corporate Affairs. I'm also part of the committee. We had 5 subcommittees who have worked overnight and they have come up with regulations, rules, and also various things for information utilities and for resolution professionals. And we have had the appointment of the board. Sahu has been appointed. He's a very competent man who brings in a lot of exposure and experience from SEBI. I have known Sahu for more than 20 years when he did the Depositories Act in Law Ministry in 1995. They are all working together overnight, and hopefully by next month you will have the tribunal receiving the petitions. First application will be filed by next month, I hope, because everything is set now. Now, we also provided a provision, transient provision in the court. If the board comes into existence and then the resolution professionals are recognized and appointed, the government itself can recognize temporarily for these professionals and agencies who can handle these cases. Because without the professional, your court cannot start functioning. So we have provided that. And we are already in the process of identifying. To start with, we'll have to have an ad hoc recognition, which will be later regularized by the board when they come up with the syllabus and licensing conditions. So that is already built in inside the code. And I am very sure there is a lot of talent available even now, because they have been for more than 25 years. A lot of people are working in operating agencies. And a lot of youngsters, I see a lot of people here, many of them can qualify and then handle all these cases. And we'll pick up as time goes on, the professional will become, from different sources will pick up, and the board will be able to see that as very new profession emerges very fast.
So, one thing that the old statute and the regulatory framework did not provide for, as such, was the role of foreign creditors. Now, here, I think a few days back, the draft code for the banks and financial institutions, and that they have specifically said that preference priority should be given for local creditors. Now, given that you know, we do want the bond market to develop, do you think that there is requirement for any provisions in the code for foreign creditors, given that you know, you're likely to have some issue with RBI as well, with respect to either how much money is going out, evaluation or anything like that?
No, we didn't want to have such a thing in the court, present court. We wanted to treat foreign creditors on par with Indian creditors. We didn't want to discriminate. We didn't want to do that.
Okay.
is already there. There is a strong lobby from foreign institutional investors that should have the benefit of such lobbying for that. So they also said we need to. But the thinking is the surplusage in the long run should go. If the port becomes very successful, surplusage act doesn't have to exist.
Right.
Because coming under the port, your realization will be faster than going under the surplusage.
So not only that, when you come under the port, you act as a team.
Yes.
Whereas if you go under surplusage, then there is always a possibility that you know you'll be holding out, and so everyone suffers as a result.
Just to follow up on that, it's an important point. Was there any discussion that happened with, you know, whether Ministry of Finance or the Reserve Bank on capital repatriation through this process?
No, there is not on that aspect. But then we have representations from the Reserve Bank and all of them are represented. Not on capital repatriation.
But on foreign creditors, they agreed on...
So the other important aspect about the court, which is not there in the earlier legislation, is international cooperation. We see that, I think here it is statutorily entrenched, but practically we know that CCI, for instance, since you also mentioned, Mr. Sahu, they have MOUs with regulators in other countries. Do you see that impacting recovery over here? We know that there are certain cases, like whether it is a Sahara case or even Kingfisher, news reports do talk about certain assets which are there outside. How expeditious do you think this will be with the cooperation, given that even with the MOUs, you still have the long process of, you know, some treaty or the other which will have to be invoked, you have to go through central government and things like that. But how do you see this expediting the whole attachment of foreign assets?
No, but sections are very clear. These two were brought in because initially, when we started the work, we did not provide for cross-border transactions. By the time we were in the final stages, this question arose that your Act doesn't provide for cross-border transactions. Then it said we will address it separately because there is a strong case, unicentral model on cross-border cross-border bankruptcy that you should adopt it. The point is that the cross-border model law is talks about cooperation between countries. And that requires, that presupposes the existence of a good bankruptcy ecosystem, like professionals and the information utilities and all those things, a dedicated bankruptcy court. These were lacking under our system. So now with the court functioning, you have that ecosystem, we can adopt this model law then sooner or later. But in model law, there is no reciprocity. The foreign professionals can come, but Indian professionals, we have not, don't have many who can go abroad. So these are all issues which will have to be addressed as the court starts functioning. Adopting the modern law won't take much time. You can do that. But then we didn't have the ecosystem. Now it has come in, let it grow up, then we can take the next step forward. But till then, we have to live with these MOUs with the foreign country.
Information side. So we hope that even that goes a long way and
I think, you know, we've gone beyond the time for when we promised to open this up for questions. So, if it's okay, we'll take some questions on the phone and then, you know, we can continue the conversation.
Certainly, sir. We'll begin the question and answer session.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, press star and one on the touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to only use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants who wish to ask questions may please press star and one at this time. The first question from the line of Pooja Chhajar from Silip. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Just one small confirmation that we wanted. What do you want to understand is that whether government dues would fall within financial creditors or operational creditors? Specifically, the taxes.
Government dues?
You mean government can file a petition?
Yes. How
the
government
use? No, under Section 53, the priorities are given in Section 53. It ranks below the unsecured creditors. The ranking is given. Waterfall is in Section 53 is very clear. You see, if you want, I can read out. 53 says, insolvency resolution process cost, liquidation cost paid in full A. B, the following debts which shall rank equally between among the following. 1, workmen's use for a period of 24 months preceding the liquidation commencement date. 2i, debts owed to a secured creditor in the event that secured creditor has relinquished security in the manner set out. And C, wages and unpaid dues owed to employees. D, financial debts owed to unsecured creditors. Then comes E, the following dues shall rank equally between among the following. Any amount due to the central government, state government, etc., etc., etc. This is government dues of down below in the waterfall.
Hello.
I understand in the liquidation waterfall it does we have specific mention of where the government dues fall. I mean, just going by the literal meaning of the financial creditors and operational creditors, what we are trying to just understand is whether government will have an option to make an application for IRP.
Yes. Financial, if you are a financial creditor, they can. They're not bond.
Yes, the question is, was it envisaged whether government would be then treated as a financial creditor to get the right to
appoint as the financial creditor has been defined with reference to financial debt. Financial debt has been defined very broadly. So, financial debt means debt along with interest, if any, which is this, I'm reading.
So
they are falling in the category.
So would even the taxes due would qualify as debt?
Taxes?
Taxes due, would they have, would that also fall under debt and have to pay debt?
Yes.
We have the next question from the line of Mark Rooney from Peter & Partners. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for the information that you've given us. Just one more thought. You mentioned before about the winding up process. It takes many, many years to complete. But for those unsecured creditors who maybe have initiated the winding up process, is there a mechanism to move it to the bankruptcy code, or do we have to, once it's been initiated and the official liquidator has been appointed, do we have to stay within that framework, or can we move it to an insolvency professional?
No, unsecured creditors are also financial creditors. They'll have the same right, and the code is really tight about the timelines and on the decision making. So that the creditor committee decides by 75% of voting. So, you know, unsecured creditors will have a say in that, all those matters. And the resolution professional has to act under the guidance of the creditors committee. And the timelines are specified in the code, 180 plus 90, that's the limit. Beyond that, they have to pass the liquidation order. They can't keep on prolonging it. There's no point. If you can't revive it, then there's wind up. If you can revive it, enter into the resolution plan and then implement the resolution plan. So everything is, the past experience will not be repeated under the court.
Sorry, was the question for the existing proceedings?
Yes, if we've already initiated proceedings prior to the code actually being in motion, is there a mechanism to bring it under the
the chapter of the Companies Act has been, rehabilitation chapter has been omitted and has been brought into the court. And I don't know on what motion, because winding up was initiated in your case. It's a voluntary winding up, or and what stage it is coming, I'm not very sure.
And ideally, I think it should be brought under the new code and decided afresh.
If it's involuntary winding up, you know, and if it's under the Companies Act, then it will anyways go to NCLT, so it can
be transferred.
And if the OL has been appointed, that implies under the code.
Right. And so they can then take the advantage of the investment at the IRP.
But all cases under the BIFR will await. We have provided a clause.
Okay. Maybe just one last question. I noticed in the preliminary report about the bankruptcy code that it has to be voted in over 75%, then it will be accepted. But as we know, many of these companies, there's a lot of secured creditors that are involved, which probably take the threshold of 75%. So does that mean unsecured creditors don't have an equal say in the matter?
So this is something which we have to live with, because it's very difficult to enter into this area how the creditors committee will function. We hope that financial creditors will decide what is really best for them. Whether the company should be at a growing concern or it should be liquidated and should be wound up. So we did not address that in the code, mainly because that will lead to a lot of other litigation. So we just kept it for the time being under wraps and left it to the hope that the creditors committee will do what is best in their interest.
And the waterfall
will take care of that.
I think this is also in line with international standards.
Yep, that's it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions, please press star and one at this time. We have the next question from Navneet Jain from ASC Legal Solicitors. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. My question is, as per my knowledge, the code talks about the moratorium period. When the corporate insolvency or an individual insolvency starts. So I want to know that this moratorium period is an absolute, that it, you know, saves all the proceedings, whether it is civil, criminal, or it talks only about that period only.
It's absolute. You see the moratorium. No legal proceedings during that term period.
Yeah.
Section 14, it deals with moratorium. The moratorium prohibiting all of the following. A institution of suits or continuation of pending suits or proceedings against the corporate, including execution of any judgment, decree, order in any court of law, tribunal, arbitration panel or other authority. D. Transferring, encumbering, alienating or disposing of by corporate debtor any of its assets or any legal right or beneficial interest thereon. C. Any action to foreclose, recover or enforce any security interest created by the corporate debtor in respect of the property, including action under the Securitization Act. D. The recovery of any property by owner or lessor where the property is occupied by or in the possession of the corporate debtor. So it's up to moratorium, section 14.
So it's the same in terms of individual banker insolvency also?
Just 1 second. Individual insolvency, we don't do.
Yes, sir.
Section 101 that provides during the moratorium period any pending legal action. No, it's slightly different. 101.2 deals with that moratorium of individuals.
Okay.
101. It says, during the moratorium period, any pending legal action or proceeding in respect of any debt shall be deemed to have been stayed. B. The creditor shall not initiate any legal action or legal proceedings in respect of any debt. C. The debtor shall not transfer, alienate, encumber, and etc. These are only three. This is narrowed than what is there in section 14.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. reminder to the participants who wish to ask questions may please press star and one at this time. Well, so there are no further questions on the audio bridge.
Okay. Any questions from the audience here? So we have, sort of the leading the GC luminaries in the room. So, these are the people who are actually going to end up implementing and using the code.
Normally, the initial predictors are, most of them are secured. The unsecured predictors, there is a bifurcation, financial and operational, and there's a separate treatment for both of them.
So there's no difference between the secured and unsecured creditors. So they're all treated equally.
Okay. And the committee compares of both secured
yes.
And okay. Is there any threshold? Threshold limit for the who can be a participant or they have to choose a membership?
No, it depends on the value of the creditors.
Practically, how do you see this actually playing out? Now, the NCLT is being constituted right now. Judges are being appointed.
NCLT is functioning. They're dealing with other cases. Right. It's the bankruptcy jurisdiction. They will start next month. But the tribunal is functioning. They're handling other cases.
And in terms of, one of the concerns that the industry has is that you will have the same judges, the same professionals in a different governor. So will we really be able to bring in the efficiency that the court needs, that the market needs?
See, this is a criticism against the judiciary also. Jeremy Bentham said, judge-made laws can never be better than the judges who make them. We need to get the best people. Then at least, whatever, there is a problem of manpower. And having got the manpower, at least now we have to train them. At least the second thing we can do is to expose them to the greatest, latest exposure. And that is what we want to do with all these judges. We are having a lot of capacity building programs for these judges to understand the market economy. There are market decisions they should understand. They should not sit and talk about the principles of natural justice and keep on granting adjournments. That is not so. So there are a lot of programs lined up for the judges in National Judicial Academy to expose them to the provisions of the court, and already they have been exposed. They have had some training programs, I think. And more than the judges, we need to train these resolution professionals who will be the real persons who will educate these judges. The judges will be have to be enlightened, and that will come from the market forces, the people who are in the market. That is more important. And I think it's not necessary you should have just a billion people there. You actually, whatever there, you try to enlighten them and try to get the best out of it, because the country is going through such a stage, and we can't expect them always the best to be in the best state.
Yeah, and practically, the court is quite self-sufficient. You always have statutory claims. So how do you see this playing out? Again, is it, we'll have to see how the bankruptcy court and the courts into it start practicing, or do you see an issue with respect to how it's actually, the challenges in other jurisdictions and under other acts?
I think as far as national company law tribunal is concerned, corporate insolvency will take off. But as far as individual insolvency is concerned, the subject is too wide and disparate. It's not coming under a single straight line. So different types of cases will come up. That has to be handled. And then the enforcement of that part is not done yet. That will follow later, because we want to just implement corporate insolvency. And that will follow later. And we hope to address that issue, and the government is doing right now.
Situations I contemplate from the ground level of just thinking of how it operates in the ground level. I do care for various banks in India. In my understanding, that is Section 17
No, you have written. I have no understanding. I'm a long man. No, no. So I am a draftsman. I only hold the mirror. I have done so many acts in my life without understanding.
Yeah. Very modest.
What happened in the when 13 postings have started in the they make the presentation, it is decided to the speaking order, they go in essay in 17 and they get a state. Now practically on when it comes on the ground, on the rubber beats the road, what happens that issue in DRT1 in Delhi, you get a state, in DRT2, you don't get a state, land rubber, recover entire amount. And if that reduces order, somebody goes to DRAT in Sabrat, he has to deposit 75 or 50%. Now, as a bank, when I interact with the bank, they are not interested at all in the revival plan because it is quite revival. They want to know how they can get money and what time and how much. So, in my personal understanding, 17 would be enforced and officials are educated on that. Probably it will be very effective. What happens when I go for the symbolic position and actual position and then recover it, take it to my custody, appoint the liquidator or receiver, then the creditor, the debtor doesn't have any root here. So matter gets over then and there. Here in this process, 14 days time after application, 30 days time after RP appoints the committee. Committee then comes out with 180 days situation. 90 plus 90. So whether it's 9 months thereafter, if they don't come out with 75% plus, then it goes into litigation. So that 9 months can be shortcut to 2-3 months time in case section 17 is modified and asked. So that is my understanding probably.
I think we interact. Yes, no, you're right, but then the resolution plan should provide for that.
No, sir, I'm not talking about resolution. I'm saying I'm a creditor.
Mm.
And the other party is a debtor.
Mm.
So I want to recover my money.
Mm.
So this actually comes into play only after 9 months. Yes, because
no, but you are not coming under the code. You are under the code, isn't it?
Any person can go, even debtor can go for resolution.
Yes.
Any person. I'm saying that the problem having, which is critical to facing is that the recovery of money, that debt mentally is arising. So it is actually giving the effective mode to recover the money and make the market more viable. So I'm saying that there is one perspective which I have may be incorrect. That section 17, if strengthened, could also be supporting to this entire.
You know, the problem with the bank finance is bank officers are afraid of taking decisions because of the CVC. The problem is they are not taking market decisions. Their hands are tied, so they don't want to. They're not worried. They're worried more about the retired life being affected by summons and standing in the courts. They're not given the choice, decision, marketplace. They have to take decisions. Sometimes some loans may go, then they can't be held responsible. So that problem arises at the bank. There's a problem because of bank finance. If it's not bank finance, if you raise money from the market, that issue will be solved. Your problem is because of the nationalized banks especially coming into play.
I think these days a lot of pressure from Ministry of Finance, even on the nationalized bank, to recover money as soon as possible. Because now there's the RBI audit officer every quarter, they have to put up the report to the RBI officers. So now there's a lot of pressure which I'm feeling these days. And so one more, I have one question. There's a moratorium clause where it says that essential services have to be provided during the moratorium. So now this goes on for 90 days or 9 months time. So now, I'm not really clear about what is the essential services. A company may be providing output services, but we having some kind of input services. So input services, I'm a service provider. I know the company is dead now, almost going to be dead. I don't know whether it's going to be revived or not. So why should I put my value at stake by providing the services to them? Now, it could be either public utility, maybe water, maybe electricity. So that could be something where public and private both are having stake. But purely a private person is put into obligation or must provide. It's quite...
It is mainly to address these utilities.
Yes. it adds to utility only.
Mainly that, what, that's what we had in mind. Electricity and other things should not be cut off.
So in case BSES comes to know, right people, that this contract is going to be over after 9 months, would not be so difficult to convince them to. And they would also want to become a party to the entire process.
Yes, because their operational credit is.
And sir, in case, in a similar situation, if I convert somebody to, in a situation what is happening these days, unit tests and all that, the person was actually booked a tax and paid a huge amount of money. Now they want to get the refund. Would they also become operational credit?
Yes, yes, yes.
So they can also approach.
Yes. They can, but then I think they're having the real estate deal connected. I don't know whether it is being...
No, sir, it has not been forced yet.
That, right, your remedy will be there. It's very good act. That if they enforce the tax, all those problems will be solved.
But, sir, it doesn't actually provide for the finding up or resolution of the...
No finding up. He'll be only interested in taking back the money. He'll not be interested in winding up.
Right, sir. So
but that will come here in the operation director.
Because, you know, what I can foresee is that in case some...
The operational could resort to the
they can at least sell off the land of the
default
developer and probably recover at least
100%, 50%. Because when the code was being drafted, everybody was in parliament was only asking how this code will prevent Malaya type. They were only concerned with that. If the code had been there, that would not have happened because Malaya would not have suffered such a long time. The employees would have gone to the tribunal to get it wound up because the dues have not been paid. Why they should kept on the rolls for 4 or 5 years without being paid money? So that would not have been. See, another important thing in the code which I forgot to mention is that the test to find out whether a company is insolvent or not is a default based test, not a network corrosion test. In Chica, we face a network corrosion test. By the time 51% of our network gets eroded and you discover that there's nothing for you to revive. So we went in for the default basis. The earliest possible default, operational creditors can tell you, the financial creditors can tell you, or the debtor himself can tell. So that is the test to find out your sickness at the earliest possible opportunity, then you address the issue so that you can revive and keep it going.
The maximum problem is faced by banks in at least that's right. From the infrastructure in a company which is into both projects. So they get this concession agreement from the NHAI or whichever it's capable. And based on that, they take loan. And loan is not, 10, 1500 crores from 1000 crores. And they continue for months time or 2 months time. And thereafter they loan. They siphon off the money. So in this situation, how, this could help in survival of the entire company where there's no political, no security, there's nothing actually except the paper. That's
no.
What happened to
you. You see, you at the earliest possible opportunity, you would have found out there's siphoning of money. You trigger a petition at the earliest possible opportunity. You don't wait for them to siphon off a lot of money and then wake up and then you say, no, this is a... Your code provides for the earliest trigger, or you can, somebody can trigger it. Something you feel the company.
What happens in this? They have person A is the company which is taking the position. They appoint B, C, D, E, F as the other subcontractor. They actually pay out the money to them. And that subcontractor doesn't have a duty to the land. So it becomes a little difficult in that sense. So,
on the beach. one confession without any assets and without any history. Most of these developers didn't even have the history of developing assets and they got through. So that has been the main pain point. So no matter what you do, whether the bankruptcy court or Reserve Bank allows them to, you know, either restructure with taking a haircut or, you know, the pressure on announcing, you know, large number of NPAs goes away from the bank, that issue by the bankruptcy court itself is not going to get resolved.
And you just asked about Reserve mentioned, the important thing of people over here is the default, not being sick as it was under SICA. So it does call for a little bit of vigilance on the part of creditors, whether they are an operational or a financial creditor. In a case like this, for infrastructure projects, what we are seeing, both in power and in roads, we are seeing a lot of projects being rescheduled right now, where the government is now looking at real allotting certain concessions to new people because the existing concessionaire is not delivering on that. As Tatsang said, I don't necessarily, even based on the little work that we've done, I don't necessarily think it's a matter of the code. A little bit of KYC either on the part of the authority or the bank and on being vigilant and seeing how things are happening. So, based on how the construction industry is, whether it is infrastructure or, you know, real estate, it does require disbursement of cash at the very threshold, at the very beginning when there is absolutely nothing. So all you have is like, you know, barren land, you have blocks of land, you have to acquire, you give it off to the subcontractor so that he procures the material because they think to a large extent the cash industry, they need the advances without which they don't proceed. But then even if you look at the company back, there's a lot of onus and responsibility which is fixed on directors, including independent directors. So what the government has done this time is, under all of these legislations, they're putting a lot of burden on, or to say, responsibility on the private sector, that you get your act together and then we'll see how the law and business takes care of itself.
Having said that, if you have the committee of creditors, right, and if there is a willpower at the bank, the pain point has been, of course, that the bankruptcy regime doesn't work, right? Binding up doesn't really work. So if you can efficiently actually get it done in a time period and actually recover, you know, even if it's a land bank, if you can recover the land bank and sell it, then that is the ultimate aim that the industry is pushing for.
And that is surely the situation where the JP or others are called in. But in the case of something like the common, common land, what he finally pointed out is actually more the creditors to look into before giving any.
There is nothing in the company, there is nothing in the company. Sometimes it is not the concession, what is the company?
The case is only because based on the telecom license, they have seen this question. And thereafter, how that they can't recover anything. Right. So there's nothing left. Sir, I have one suggestion. I understand. Then unless we have some ecosystem which electronically we can hide something, you know, petition and serve the other party, I think it takes more time. It's a very, very big challenge. So are we thinking about bringing this kind of you know, infrastructure or a position where
The tax has been omitted to provide for electronic transmission. This is government provides for that. Because the information utility is, you should be able to get it from the click of a button.
So the petition will also go through the information.
No, electronic filing is no, they're implementing.
A lot of authorities, like even Delhi High Court, the Competition Commission, a lot of them are now, I think it's taken about a year or something, but
In fact, the amendment says anything which is registered on the registry, you need to be a public notice. You don't need a separate notice. It's very clear. You see the latest amendment. So you can't supplement by saying, I didn't get notice, evading. All those things are things of past. Everything is now self-defined.
Also, on one of the points, the committee for which Sir was the chairperson, they have done a lot of interesting study with respect to revivals and winding ups in India versus what happened abroad. And here, as sir mentioned, judges tend to take beyond statute perspective that in the interest of workers, this should happen in the interest of the employees. You know, we should look, explore revival. And this is far beyond the point when the company probably even has a shadow of revival. Whereas abroad, I think the study talks about US, where there is absolutely no social stigma to a company being broken up into smaller pieces and then sold. But here we are still not used to that as an economic function. We would still like to preserve, I think it comes from our social background, we like to preserve things and see if that can be revived rather than, you know, break it up, break up corporate entities and sell it into different divisions.
See the Companies Act, whether there is any potential impact there.
I can tell you one thing, illustration. There was an issue which came up for the conversation for the High Court, Delhi High Court, the CP was sitting about, okay, is this about the expeditious recovery?
Yes.
So that the TPF interpretation came up for the conversation.
Yes.
The TPF conversation was that whether this TPF can be resorted by one government company and the other government. So they brought a distinction of accessory corporation, corporation, sole corporation, mm-hmm. and thereafter they decided that no, you can't resort this summary procedure against the government. The government is not supposed to be at the receiving end, which is actually representing the public. You know, in the absence of void, I don't think, you know, there must be some law after itself will be fine. And yes, it will be very difficult to recover because you can't take a force against the government.
Right. If we look at the flow, I think would be corporate person and corporate HR. Corporate HR contemplates any corporate person, and corporate person is company like LLP or any other person incorporated with limited liability under any law for the time being enforced, excluding financial service provider. So there's enough room over there for you to argue that even a statutory corporation will be there. But practically, that might not happen because the minute you did that, there is a possibility, assuming that, let's say it's something like a company where government has invested shares, which is also a listed company, not just created through an act of parliament, there is a possibility that government would itself infuse more funds into it. So, and when you're looking at the trigger for this is really debt, I'm sorry, default. So for default to happen, you're looking at a statutory corporation or a central government company defaulting to the State Bank of India. Now, the minute that happened, at least some minister or some bureaucrat will write to the State Bank of India saying that, come on, you need to withdraw this.
I had one thing. There's a judgment by the Supreme Court where it says the secretaries of the ministry
have to first. There's an official memorandum to that effect.
Yeah.
And even CPC, I think there is a provision that if, for instance, Ministry of Railways cannot file a recovery against Ministry of Telecom, or vice versa. Ministry of Finance cannot. The finance ministry can, revenue can recover from government companies, but departments, even department disputes cannot be resolved through court. It has to be at the secretary level. There is an office memorandum to this effect.
Quite unlike in Delhi and
Delhi. No, but center and state or two states can always pass. There is no prohibition over there.
Okay, on that note, unless, you know, we can always carry on these questions in the room. But thank you very much, sir, for, you know, taking out the time and, you know, enlightening us on a very important legislative piece of work that you've been involved in. And, you know, we look forward to this becoming, you know, very well used. By 2017, as the finance minister guided us, maybe we'll call you again then,
please,
as we start to do it. Thank you, everybody. We're going to wind up the proceedings right now.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Desai Associates, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.